Thanks for the invitation, and it's just a great honor to be here, back to Chicago. So since we only have 15 minutes, and I think I made too many slides, I have 120 slides, I'm trying to go skip a few technical details. So I think I'm going to start with the take-home message, actually. So what we're going to study and present here is the following. Okay, imagine if I hit your arm, okay, and then you're going to tell me a pain score, right? How painful that is, say, from a scale of 0 to 10, say 3, right? And if I hit you harder, then you will tell me that's more painful, say 5. And why? We want to find out the regions in your brain that is mediating such effect, okay? In particular, not only the regions, but also how much each component, say, a tiny little bit part of your brain that is making a contribution of this effect, okay? So these are my advisors and collaborators, and this is my advisor, Dr. Lindquist, and then we claim that our research has no conflict and financial interest. So why are we interested in mediation analysis? In particular, why are we interested in pain study? Well, because it's painful, but also because it's very costly. You know, every year we spend about $560 to $635 billion on pain-related treatment. And it is very pervasive in terms of the numbers of Americans suffering from pain. It's actually more than all the other chronic pains, chronic diseases combined. Okay, we understand that pain is mediated by your brain. What else, right? So when it hits you, some part of your brain fires up, right? But as neuroscientists and statisticians, we're interested in which part of your brain regions are contributing to such effect. In particular, can we detect, quantify, and isolate such mediation via fMRI study, for instance. Okay, and traditionally, the mediation analysis is done via the Bayer-Canning model, which has some drawbacks, but it's very pervasive in the literature. Okay, the shortcoming is it only has one mediator variable. Okay, so in your brain, you have a lot of neurons. You know, in our field, we have a lot of voxels. Each voxel is a tiny little bit cubic in your brain. Right, we have say 200,000 voxels in your brain, and we cannot use a single univariate model. Okay, so we come up with a framework that deals with this problem. Okay, and our next step will be to extend this framework to the causal inference framework. Okay, so in our study, we define a framework called principal directional mediation. Actually, upon submitting this paper, we started calling it as a directional of mediation because the principal word is too strong, as we use a method that maximizes the likelihood. But whether this maximizer is the principal one or not, there might be someone that is suboptimal but is the principal one. Okay, so we delete that word. And our method can be used in many high-dimensional data analysis, for instance, neuroimaging and high-dimensional gene study for P, where you have thousands of genes or thousands of brain voxels. Okay. So the simple example where you have a finger biting, and then Charlie will say that hurts, and then we study which part of the brain is firing up. Okay. So traditionally, this effect is studied in the Bayer-Canning univariate model, where we have this univariate mediator M, and X is here as the pain. Okay, Y is your pain reporting, and then this is what we call the direct effect. If you have a stronger pain applied to the person, then he will report to a higher pain level, right? And then at the same time, this mediator is indirectly affecting your outcome. For instance, here you have only one gene or only one region of interest in your brain, okay? And we extend that effect to the multivariate case where we have thousands or millions of brain voxels. Okay, we have treatment X, which is the pain applying to arm, and Y is the response that you report, and we measure your brain signals over every single part of your brain. Okay, so the data is collected by Dr. Wager. And then for those of you who are not familiar with MRI, I'll just walk you through quickly with the related information. So fMRI is a non-invasive technique for studying brain activity. So during the course of the fMRI study, a series of brain signals are acquired when there is a stimuli applied. Okay. So we measure the brain signals across time and across different subjects. Okay, and then we record the intensity of a little cubic in your brain, and each little part of your brain is like 3 by 3 by 3 millimeter, and it has an intensity score, and we'll measure that across the time. And in our study, I think we averaged the effect over time. Okay, so this is an example where we have a patient, and then we apply a level of temperature to his forearm, and then we ask him how painful he feels, right? At the same time, we will measure the brain signal over the entire part of the brain. So here we have actually, for every point, it's one of the 200,000 voxels. A voxel, again, is a little part in your brain. Okay? So for the same subject, we'll do several trials. So different levels of pains are applied to him, and then we will ask him how painful he feels and measure simultaneously the brain signal. Okay? And then for a different subject, we will do the same thing over and over again. Okay? And then we store. So here is some representation of the brain signal. So for every subject, at different level of pain, there's a different level of responses, right? And there are differences between subject and across subject. Okay. So we define. So I'll probably spend like 2 minutes. I'll try to spend 1 minute on this slide. If you understand this slide, I think it's the entire study. Okay. So we have this YIJ is the response of your brain, the response of your pain reporting. It's a univariate score. For subject I at trial J, your XIJ is the pain applied to that person at that trial. Okay? Your MIJ is a brain signal that's measured at that particular trial across your whole brain. Okay, so these are all known. X, Y, and M, we know these. Okay, so we propose two models. The first one is the Y is a combination of X and M, which we call this is the indirect effect. And then your MW is a combination of this noise plus this X. And we are not known this beta, alpha, gamma, and this W. Okay, so alpha, beta, gamma are what we call the parameter coefficients. And W is what we propose as the directional mediation. So this W acts as a long vector, okay, of dimension 200,000, each component of this W correspond to one part of your brain, okay? And then if we observe that score is very large, we say that part is fired up during this process, okay? So intuitively, the W gives a mapping of this brain signal M that is simultaneously most predictive of your response pain reporting, conditioning on X, which is your pain score, and is predicted by X. Okay, so our the first directional mediation is a long vector W1 that is unknown. We wanted to find it out with length 1 that it maximizes the likelihood, which I'll introduce in the next slide. And the second one is the long vector of the same dimensional, which is orthogonal to the first one, and it is with a length 1 that maximizes the remainder of the likelihood, and so on and so forth. The kth one is orthogonal to every single one preceding it with length 1 and maximizes the likelihood. Okay? So this is how we define the likelihood, and there we assume some very strong assumption here. We actually assume independence across different subjects and across different trials. If not, we can actually put a sigma inverse here, but this is just as a simple introduction. Okay, so now we have this likelihood function, and we constrain this length W1 to be 1, so we add a penalty term, okay? And this dual problem can be expressed as follows, and we want to find out the W and theta. Theta is, again, the alpha, beta, gamma, which is our coefficients, okay? So because this lambda, which is not of our interest, can be profiled out by one set of parameter of interest, under some regularity condition, we can show that W is a function of theta and lambda. Lambda is a function of theta. Theta then is a function of W1 and lambda. Then we can just do iteration, okay? And then we just for an initial value, we just let them iterate till convergent. And we actually can show theoretically they actually approach to some asymptotic properties, okay? For higher order directional mediations, we just add those penalty terms for the first approach. Okay, for the k greater than 2, we just keep adding them. Okay, or we can do the projection approach. This one's much faster, but it would not give as accurate results as the prior approach, because that one would be more likely to give you the global maximum. Okay. So under some regularity condition, I'll skip the details. We can show that all those parameters are asymptotically normal, which means the directional mediation and the causal pathway coefficients are normal. And then we can just do inference and whatnot. So for high dimensions, I'll skip the technical detail. So we basically use the singular value decomposition method, but we apply that to the generalized population value decomposition method proposed by Krishnan et al. On JASA paper. So basically, we find out for every subject, we have this matrix of neural information. We can just decompose that into several parts. And then we can, in their paper, this P is actually population level. But in our case, we extend it to subject level as well. The reason why we do so is for high dimensional data, it's very hard computationalized to extract the information. We just call this UK VK tilde as MK tilde, which is our mediation matrix, which is our lower dimension, which works for our algorithm. Okay, so I'll skip the details. So in general, we are trying to find out this MK as a decomposition of three matrices, and the first two we'll call it as the M transform. Because we know all these matrices, we can just do the same analysis and project back to the original space. Okay, so the MK tilde here acts as the MK, but is of lower dimension and is computationally feasible. Okay, and then we have done some simulation studies just to show that our asymptotic properties are met. So you know, when we increase the sample size, we observe that the distribution are become more and more normal and with smaller error. Okay, and one of the problems of our approach is that the signs are not identifiable, meaning that you know the plus minus sign will be mixed up. You know, look at those two voxels. They'll both give you a t statistic of zero, right? But apparently this one is you know significant to some extent. So in order to deal with that problem, we just do the preceding approach, and we find for each voxel a p-value, but in all those three cases, the PR will be approximate one, right? How do we do this? So we call the smallest one of those statistic as our statistical use. Therefore, if you observe a significant score, although it's very conservative, it is indeed very significant, and we have run some simulations, and apparently this one follows quote unquote a uniform distribution. The long right tail is because of the conservative method that we used. Okay, and then now is the interesting part. We have done some you know real data analysis. So these regions with lights are the ones are fired up significantly during this study. And we call the voxels being significant means we have evidence that these voxels are involved in a pathway, but we do not claim yet they are causally related to the pain study. They are just the potential voxels that are fired up during this entire process. Okay, the first directional mediation shows positive weights on both targets of sending non-susceptive pathways, including the following regions. Okay, and then it also contains some non-susceptive targets for the second one, so that one is orthogonal to the first, right? So it has some overlapping part, but it has some part that is not reflected by the first directional mediation. Okay, so these are the real data findings of the first two directions of mediation, and we have our package that can help you to do those analysis for high-dimensional mediation. And you know, for the last 1 minute, there are lots of extensions can be done to this to this study. For instance, we can apply Bayesian analysis, and we can extend that to a causal framework, and we can just truly find out the real principal directional mediation by maximizing the mediation effect, as well as the ones that gives the non-negative weights. And also, on my flight here, I was thinking, you know, what if there's one part of your brain region that is fired up first, and then causally or non-causally, there's another part that is fired up the second. Okay, so we can do those, and we can do those, you know, graph analysis where, you know, we can play with the graphs and find which subgraph that maximizes the likelihood or not. And this research was funded by NIH grants, and we'd like to thank those collaborators who helped with the coding and whatnot. And thank you very much.
Okay. All of our questions.
Thank you.